Welcome back to episode number 12. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Curtis.
And this is Partners in Crime. So now we're back for part two, and we're actually on time this week.
Yeah, top of the morning to you.
Oh, happy, yeah, St. Patrick's Day. And Jinx, you owe me a something.
Like a green beer?
Yeah.
I got one right here.
So today's St. Patrick's Day, and your episode comes out tomorrow, and it's going to be on time. So I don't have to hear anybody complaining about having to be waiting until next week. You don't have to hear me complain about doing two episodes this week because this is the only one we're doing. And it is a doozy.
I'd say so, too. It's a real doozy when my wife is punctual.
No. I mean the case.
Oh, I just appreciated you being on time.
Well, Curtis hates true crime. And now that we're getting into true crime cases, he's like, oh.
I have to tell everybody that is listening that this week has actually been pretty much a struggle for me since we recorded, because now when I find out something, I instantly think the absolute worst of everything.
It's so, like, every single thing, he's like, well, what if this happened? What if that? What if, and I'm just like, well, no, that's not how it always is. And he's like, well, you have my brain all messed up from all this true crime. And I'm like, okay, don't be blaming me.
But I have to. It's the only thing that's changed.
Okay, but I, like, relax listening to true crime. Like, I do it to, like,
pass. Yeah, it's disturbing.
Like, the past the time when I do it at work, and it's just, like, it's not relaxing to hear about it, but it's something that I do that doesn't stress me out. If that makes sense.
No, because I feel like I'm going to wake up, and you're going to be stabbing me repeatedly.
Well, I'm not a criminal.
But you like the thoughts of a criminal to subside your conscience. No, that's not
true. It's just a pastime. It's interesting to me, the psychology behind it. And plus, I really like to, you know, get the victim stories out there.
Why couldn't you have just started with that? That seems normal. The rest doesn't.
I think that they're both normal.
You do.
Okay. So anyways, we are going to get into part two. And, I mean, honestly, I could have probably made this, like, 20 parts, if you want me to be honest. But two parts it is, because, I mean, it happened for 11 years, so obviously that's a lot of time.
That's so long. That would make her kid like a teenager when she got out.
Whose kid? Michelle's?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she was in captivity for 11 years, and she had Joey taken from her when he was 2.5.
Right, so he'd be 13 and a half years old.
Yeah.
And the last time that she was supposed to see him was when he was 2.5.
I know. It's sad.
It is sad.
It's really sad, so I guess we'll get right into it, and you'll be all right.
I'm nervous.
You should be. Okay, and also, at the beginning of this, there is a lot of talking about rape, miscarriages, etc. Trigger warning. If you don't want to listen to this episode, here is your warning.
Hashtag triggered.
There's going to be a lot of triggers in this episode. And sorry, you can't fast forward. You have to.
So upset.
Okay, so last week we stopped where, what?
Sorry, I was trying to fast forward.
Oh my gosh. So last week we stopped where Michelle was in the basement and he had put the motorcycle on her head.
And she was like peeing herself again.
Yeah, she had to. What other choice did she have? So
I'm just thinking that's so nasty. And he'd even like shower her or anything.
And that's just the thing is she felt awful. And he was like, yeah, I don't care. Because he lived in a dirty house anyway. He was a gross, dirty person.
That sounds like it.
Excuse me. So when she was finally brought back upstairs, she got put in a small bedroom and she was chained to the bed with a padlock and chains. And the chain wasn't very long. So she fought back. She was punished by getting beat. She was starved on for days on end. She was raped sometimes up to 6 times a day. She was basically living in, like, pure hell.
This poor girl.
She was, he would chain her up and walk her around the house. Like a dog, basically.
What?
And
like puppy play?
No. Eventually, she was allowed to walk around the house with no chains, but she was way too scared to leave or run, so she just would always stay where she was supposed to be at. Sometimes he would test her by letting her go outside and just sit in a chair.
Wow.
And so she would just sit there and be like, okay, well, what am I going to do? His
run?
It's a like a huge, tall gate. She can't climb it.
Oh, I guess I didn't hear the gate part.
Yeah, because that, when they first got to the house, yeah, he shut the gate behind him and locked it with a padlock.
Well, I just imagined it was like one of the ones where like you'd open it and then you'd drive through and then you'd close it behind you.
It is like that, but with a padlock. So he thought that she was going to run, but she never did, because really, what would be the point? And then if she didn't get away, which she most likely wouldn't, he would just punish her for it anyways. So, and this is going to get like really dark.
It's darker than this?
Yes. It's bad.
Why did I agree to this?
So, I don't know what's going on. So there was no escaping, even though she did try to escape a few times, but like not obvious attempts, if that makes sense. He would get mad at her for not being happy.
What?
Yeah. He would be like, we're supposed to be a family.
This guy's
and she's
delusional.
Like, I'm chained to a bed. So one day when she was locked in the bedroom, she asked him about the puppy he promised her. And then he eventually got her one. And you're not going to like this part. She loved this dog. Dog just like, he was like, you can have the dog, take care of it, make it go in the box, and I'm not cleaning up after it. And she was like, okay, cool. And like, she finally had something to entertain her time, because day right. in and day out, she just sat chained up to her bed. Her only contact was with him. And so she named her dog Lobo, like L-O-B-O. And
so wait, was he cleaning up after her though?
No.
So then why would she care if he like wasn't cleaning
up? So she had a bucket and he would empty it out like once every couple months.
I'm just imagining, because you're talking about how filthy this place is, and I was thinking about her tied up on the electrical cord. And then like, did he just leave that on the floor, or did he just clean it up maybe?
I don't think it ever gets cleaned up.
Yeah.
But I did watch a video, and she was basically hung. She said she was hung like a fish, like right. basically horizontally, if that makes sense. So anyways, she trained the dog to go to the bathroom in a cardboard box that was in the bedroom. And it would always go in that box. So well, I guess, you know, so the dog was getting bigger. So when he would come in the room to rape her, typically he would just move the dog out of the room. But one day he was just, I guess, too impatient. And when she started fighting him off, the dog started to protect her, and he picked the dog up and killed it. Like right then and there.
Well, I now definitely hate this guy.
Yeah. Michelle was beyond devastated. By February, she was freezing cold in the upstairs bedroom. She was forced to be naked all of the time. She said most of the time she could see her breath in the room because it was so cold. And she had no blankets and no clothes. And oh, she had awful. A metal chain wrapped around her.
Ew.
And which is just torture on a whole new level, because she was never even comfortable, even when she wasn't being attacked by him. So March of 2003. I was going to say 2003, but that just sounded.
Wow.
It didn't really sound right. He brought her in a TV, and she was allowed to watch TV channels, but she had to keep the volume turned down. She was not allowed to watch the news, but she would watch it anyways. And then, have you ever heard of Elizabeth Smart?
Yes.
So she was watching the news broadcast of Elizabeth Smart being found. So,
wow. So she was probably like joyful.
Filled her with hope.
Yeah.
Yes. After 8 months of being a prisoner, Ariel told her that she stinks and she needs a shower.
Well, ew.
Like the audacity. Oh, like duh.
Like, I guess my question is, it didn't bother him like any the of first the 7.5 months before the, yeah.
Right. So obviously after months of being raped, tied up, using the bathroom on herself and just living in his dirty, nasty house, she was a mess. She turns the water on, tries to wait for it to get hot. It never does. It's ice cold. And she's like, well, it's better than nothing. So she gets in and the water ran black because she was so dirty.
Ew.
Yeah. She asked him for scissors and he was like, but he's like, okay, that's fine. Her hair was cemented because of everything in it. Like his bodily fluids
in her hair.
It was cemented. She had to cut it.
Like a sock?
No, like her hair. On April 21st, 2003, Michelle watched the news and they reported a girl that had just gone missing and her name was Amanda Berry. She had been, and I want to say that she was, I really should know that because I literally just read the book. Oh no, I'm sorry. I wrote it down. I was like, wait a second. She was 16. She had just celebrated her 16th birthday.
Wow.
She was last seen leaving her shift at Burger King, being passed by a van with a familiar girl in it, and then the van came back and picked her up. The girl was no longer in the van. I don't know who the girl was. But he asked if she needed a ride, and she accepted it, and she came in under the pretense that she knew his kids and was touring the home. She was immediately on alert because it was kind of weird, and she tried to run, but he had her at that point. Michelle knew that he had taken her in because he started conditioning her the same way that he used to, and Michelle heard the loud music in the basement. So the chains, the helmet, the music, starving her in the basement for days.
Wow.
When he brought Amanda upstairs for the first time, he told Michelle that it was his brother's girlfriend. He's like, yeah, this is my brother's girlfriend, Amanda.
But like, where is his brother?
I don't know. I really How don't weird. Know. So Michelle was like, yeah, I know who that is because I literally watched her on the news.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And Michelle wasn't allowed to wear clothes, but Amanda was wearing a pair of his oversized pajamas, which were filthy and gross and dirty. But I mean, so Michelle, when she like came in the room where Michelle was at, Michelle was really embarrassed because she's naked and filthy.
Oh, I was wondering if she was naked.
Yeah. And he's like, you don't have to get mad. You guys have the same stuff. Like, you don't have to be embarrassed. And she was like, it's just disrespectful, I guess, to say the least.
Yeah, degrading.
Degrading. That's the word that I'm looking for. So he finally gave her a t-shirt, Michelle.
Well, that's good.
The TV that he gave to Michelle, he took out of her room and gave it to Amanda. And he kept them in separate bedrooms, and they were each on chains.
Wow.
In different rooms. Michelle ended up getting pregnant because she was raped so many times.
I'm surprised it's taken this long.
Yeah. She actually went on to have multiple pregnancies throughout her time spent in captivity. And Ariel was infuriated. He would throw dumbbells at her stomach, stomp on her stomach, throw her down the stairs. Every single pregnancy that she had resulted in a miscarriage. And then after she would miscarry, he would literally beat the crap out of her and tell her how bad of a person she was for aborting his child.
What the...
So you really can't win. Amanda was treated horribly, not to say this in a light way at all, but she was not given as many restrictions and she was made to sit and watch TV with him. So She was also a victim, but he liked her more, if that makes sense.
Like, she was the first, so he had a special, like...
No, Amanda.
Oh, the second one. Okay.
Yeah, he used to tell people that was his wife. He used to tell the girls that was his wife.
Huh.
So, yeah, so we'll get into that. So, he would obsess over her body, compliment her, make her go along with it, and then beat her to a pulp. He raped her between 2 and 5 times a day as well.
Wow.
So, this guy was just, like, full of it. He gave her a diary.
He wasn't full of it.
Anyways, he gave her a diary and she wrote in it all the time, like the whole time she was held captive. She was allowed to write in a diary and she was careful in how she wrote things. So just in case he read it, she wrote everything in a code. Just in case she was ever released. So he didn't get like away with anything.
Oh.
He took the TV out of Michelle's room. Oh yeah, I already said that. He took the TV out of Michelle's room, put it in hers. She was chained up to the bed, so she had to have the I can't even talk. Had to have the chains too. He would taunt her by telling her that he called and talked to her mom, and he didn't. And he was a monster to her, but in a different way. I swear, every time we do the podcast, I have such a bad cough. So, a year later, April 2nd, 2004, is when the third girl is abducted. This Wow. one's crazy. So, this is Gina DeJesus. She was walking home with her friend Arlene Castro, Ariel's daughter. She was really good friends with Ariel's daughter.
That's weird.
They used a payphone to call Arlene's mom to see if she could stay the night with Gina, but her mom said no. So the girls took off in separate directions to go to their own houses. A few minutes later, after walking, Ariel pulls up next to Gina and asks her if she has seen Arlene. And she's like, yeah, she went the other way. And he's like, I need help finding her. Can you please get in and help me find her? And she was like, I guess. And she gets in and he takes her back to his house. So just for the record, adults do not need help from kids.
Right.
Like, there's never a time where an adult needs help from a kid.
Well, that's a stranger. Think of a couple.
No. Would you just be walking down the street and ask a kid for help from the park?
Well, no, but if you were like the store and you couldn't like reach something in a tight area or something.
No,
adults. I'm not saying a stranger's kid.
Yeah.
I'm saying like my own kid.
Yeah, that's different. When she tried to leave, he took her into the basement and restrained her. And Gina was not just his daughter's friend, but she was only 14 years old when he took her. Because remember, he got mad that Michelle was 22.
Yeah.
And since it was almost exactly a year apart and in the same neighborhood, the FBI began looking into the abductions. So good. Arlene and Emily, his daughters, had a stepdad. They investigated him. And he actually went to trial for the kidnapping of the two girls. And he tried to tell them that Ariel was the abusive one and he used to beat his wife. And Ariel denied everything. He even got Emily and Arlene to testify that their stepdad had touched them inappropriately. And he was convicted of a three-year felony called gross sexual imposition.
What's that?
I'm assuming inappropriately touching kids. I don't know. I didn't look into it. Ariel used to taunt the girls and make them think that they were talking bad about each other and then beat them because they upset the other one. But it was never true. Like, he was just trying to turn them against each other. Like, he would come in and be like, she said you're making too much noise up here and she doesn't like all the racket. You need to be quiet. But they were chained to bed, so he did not care about their comfort. Like, he just didn't. He chained Gina and Michelle up together, like to each other, like they were chained at the ankles by a
chain. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so they became really close.
Literally.
Yeah. I mean, basically like he would be raping them and then just go from one to the other. Amanda got a different room, and that was just another example of how he would turn them against each other because they thought Amanda was being favored. Amanda was still a victim, but they thought, like, oh, she's getting special treatment or whatever.
Right.
I just lost my place. During captivity, March 2nd, 2006, Amanda watched on the news as a headline ran across that her mother, Luana Berry, had passed away due to a massive heart attack.
That's so sad.
Yeah, she was on the news like weekly for years since she'd gone missing. She was absolutely broken and devastated. May of 2006, Amanda Berry finds out she's pregnant.
Uh-oh.
And so does Ariel. But like I said, he treated her differently.
Right.
When I read this, my first thought was going back to all those forced miscarriages that he had Michelle go through.
Yeah.
But this time it was different. He let her stay pregnant.
What?
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. On Christmas Day 2006, Amanda was in labor, and he comes, and like this is in the middle of the like early morning hours. And he comes and wakes up Michelle to help her with the labor and the birth because Michelle had had a baby before.
Right.
And he told her, if the baby doesn't make it, neither will you.
What?
And Michelle's like, I'm not a doctor. Like,
right.
I can't guarantee that I'm going to safely deliver a baby. I've right, never done it before. I've
had one.
Yeah. So the baby comes out and is blue and not breathing.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So Ariel's screaming in her face, screaming at her, you better make that baby start breathing. And Michelle's like, I don't know what to do. I just started patting her back, and she started crying. Luckily. Sigh of relief. So,
wow.
He makes her kind of clean up the whole area.
The surprise you wanted it cleaned up.
He just wanted it out of the house for whatever reason. Like, he had her sit in a inflatable pool and give birth.
Wow.
So, surprisingly, he let the other girls hold the baby the next morning. And they were super excited. Like, this was just a little miracle in the whole mess that they were in, right?
Right.
So, Michelle and Gina figured that a screaming baby in a single older man's house would be enough for a welfare check, at least.
Right.
You know, and hopefully that would be their ticket out of there. Amanda named her baby girl Jocelyn, and by all accounts, like every single account, even the police at the end, just like Emily and Arlene, he loved his daughter Jocelyn. It's crazy, right? Ariel still kept her and the baby locked in a room, but he didn't want the baby to see chains, so he unchained her. And I think at this point, he assumed that he had full control because he could use the baby against her, obviously. As Jocelyn got older, he would take her out of the house sometimes, and he made Gina and Michelle change their names around her so that she wouldn't go out and say their names together. Because those two were both friends with his kids. So they changed. Michelle would go by Juju, and Gina would go by Chelsea. And so Ariel wanted to start taking Jocelyn to church, so he did when she was about 2.5, 3. He started taking her to church every Sunday, which is mind-blowing to me because literally he was holding her own mom captive.
Right.
This doesn't really make sense to me. One time he took her somewhere, and Jocelyn wanted to bring hot dogs home for all the girls. And so he brought them home, and he gave one to Michelle that was covered in mustard, and she was highly allergic to it. This part's crazy. She got super sick. She had an allergic reaction. She was literally swelling up.
No, no.
He had been starving her for days before he gave it to her, and he's like, if you don't eat it, you're just not going to eat ever again. And so she was like, fine, like, whatever, I'll just eat it. You know, it is what it is. So she ate it, immediately started going into an allergic reaction, swelled up, couldn't breathe. 2 days later, she still can't swallow, nothing. Gina's like basically trying to nurse her back to health, but she's on the brink of dying. She's ready to give up. Gina keeps trying to remind her about Joey, and she's like, no. I just can't. And so in the book, she recalls everything going dark. And then she sees a very unearthly bright light and a very deep voice tell her, "It's not your time, Michelle. It's not your time." And the next thing she knows, she wakes up and she's in the room with Gina again.
Wow.
Yeah. She says she'll never forget that feeling, and she knows that it was 100% God. That is how she was able to keep going.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. The next part is a really, really painful trigger warning. Has to do with miscarriage. It's a little bit more graphic than the last mention of it. So I'll just give everybody a second to skip if they want to.
Well, dang, by now they're skipping. They skipped the whole case.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so I think we've given people enough time to skip if they want to. The end of 2012, Michelle was pregnant again, and he found out, and he threw her down the stairs. He kicked her multiple times in the stomach with his boots on.
Ouch.
She ran into the bathroom crying, and she began miscarrying the baby. He's pounding on the door, telling her to hurry up, and she looks down, and she sees her baby in the toilet. She picks it up.
I am mortified.
And it's far enough along to be a fully formed body, but it's not big enough to survive outside of her womb, so it's considered a fetus at this point. It's not
oh my baby. Gosh.
It's a baby, but it's not, you know what I'm saying? So right. The medical term is a fetus. So she's screaming, like, "I'm so sorry, like, you don't deserve this, like, you deserve better than this." And he storms in the door, knocks the baby out of her hands, and screams at her for aborting his baby. Yeah, the logic. This one.
Anyways, oh my gosh.
This guy's he takes a her to her room and leaves her there and says, "Clean yourself up." He was devastated. She was devastated. Gina felt so bad. She was so worn down, and this is just horrifying. In the spring of 2013, mind you, that just happened at the end of 2012. In the spring of 2013, he took her outside and he made her dig holes. And he said it was for a garden. But the size of the hole that he was making her dig was for a grave. Like, you could tell it was huge. Like, he wanted it really deep and it was just really wide.
Wow.
He's like, "Well, come back out and finish it tomorrow." But they never did. Like, it was like a lot of empty threats. They just never came back up. On May 6, 2013, their lives would change forever. They woke up and they weren't chained that day. Just sometimes it was like that, but they just never tried to run because they didn't think they could. Jocelyn came upstairs, and that's the daughter of Amanda.
Right.
And she came upstairs and told them that her daddy went to Mama's, which was his mom's. And she had met her like a few times. And they figured it was either a test or a trap, so they were not jumping to try to get out anywhere. Amanda and Jocelyn went downstairs together, but Ariel wasn't there, so this was different. Because sometimes he would send Jocelyn upstairs to get Amanda, and they would all just watch TV because, like I said, he literally pretended that she was his wife.
Right.
And, I mean, she just went along with it because it made things easier for her daughter, I'm assuming. The next thing they knew, there was a loud pounding coming from the front door. And this is a bad area, like high crime rate. So they thought the house was getting broken into. So they went and hid. And then they heard voices yelling, "Police, police, police." And they started storming into the house. And they were like, "Yeah, right. This is a test. He literally found people to dress up like cops to see if we will rat him out. Like, don't come out of your hiding spot."
Oh, that is gosh. How
bad they were brainwashed. Amanda had forced her arm through a crack in the storm door, and someone seen her like waving her arm and screaming for help. And she draws in the attention of a man and an older woman, and they're scared. So they just kind of step away from the house and they're like, "Nope, not getting involved with that. Absolutely not."
Right. Just another keep walking.
Man walks up and he sees her and he starts trying to get the door open. And he just tells her, he's like, "Kick it out, like kick out the bottom panel. It's just aluminum."
So he's
he's like, "Just kick it out." So she kicks it out the rest of the way and she gets out. And the first thing she says is, "I need a phone." Mind you, her daughter is in the house screaming, don't do that. Dad's going to be mad. I want my dad. Because he knew, like, she kind of knew that, like, they would get in trouble for doing something like that.
Right.
So she's like, just be quiet. She's like, I need a phone. So he gives her his phone. She calls 911. And she says, I'm Amanda Berry. I've been on the news for the last 10 years. I've been missing for the last 10 years. My name's Amanda Berry. I need the police here now.
Oh, my gosh.
So the police get there, and she's like, who else is in the house? And she's like, there's two other girls in the house, and they're upstairs. So they go in, and they're like, what are your names? Michelle jumps on one of the officers and, like, clings to him. And mind you, she's so tiny, like, she just looks like a little kid, right. You know? And they're like, what's your name? And she says her name, and Gina says her name, and they're like, we've been looking for you guys for 10 years. Like,
yeah, this is disgusting.
And he was just not home.
I always just imagine when people got kidnapped that they just end up dying, like, within a week. But for them to be living, like, a decade later.
Yeah, so typically, like, when girls get abducted, if they're not put into, like, sex trafficking or a situation like this, it's, like, 48 to 72 hours is typically, like, the time frame you need to find them by. On May 6, 2013, same day, Ariel Castro was arrested. He's charged with kidnap and rape. He confesses to everything, but claims that he's very ill. Like, he's sick. He's not a monster.
Yeah, I'd say
he's
he is,
sick.
Too.
He pleaded guilty to 937 felony counts. He made a plea deal that he would plead guilty in exchange for not getting the death penalty. In his final statement, he blabbed on about how he's not a monster and most of the sex, if not all of it, was consensual. And how the FBI really dropped the ball on these girls, considering that two of them were friends with his kids. Like,
how delusional.
Right. So the judge just could barely even contain his disgust for him. And
yeah, me too.
He makes a statement basically saying, like, you've just admitted you can't control yourself. The only and best place for you is prison. Like, you don't deserve to be free in the world. You're a danger to everybody around you, blah, blah, blah. He was sentenced to life in prison plus 1,000 years. So, good for him. That's where he should go.
Right.
The house, the address was 2207 Seymour, and this was in Cleveland, Ohio. It was demolished. On September 3rd, 2013, after several complaints from Castro about how the conditions that he was living in prison were horrendous, filthy, and inhumane.
Are you kidding me?
He's going to have the audacity, after all of that, to complain about his prison conditions. Nobody cares, Ariel. Nobody.
Right. Right.
They found him at 9:18 p.m. on September 3rd, hanging dead in his prison cell with his pants around his ankles, just 33 days into his sentence.
How many?
He killed himself. 33.
Wow.
He served 33 days and he couldn't handle it anymore. He kept them captive for 11 years.
I can't believe that they made it through it.
Amanda keeps her daughter close, and all of the girls were reunited with their families. Michelle and her family have since stop talking, which don't blame her for that, because
why would they stop talking?
They were not good to her anyways. Remember at the beginning?
Oh yeah, I forgot.
And Michelle's actually recently changed her name to Lily Rosalie, and I think Lee was Joey's middle name, so I think it had partly to do with him. Her son Joey was a teenager when she was released, and he was adopted during her captivity, and the family decided not to share with him the identity of his birth mother to protect him, not to uproot his life. And she understood, but still holds out hope that one day they will get to meet again. And as of everything I've read,
she still hasn't seen him.
No, as of everything I've read, she still hasn't been reunited with him.
That is heartbreaking,
but she understands, because it's for his own, like, it's right. For him. It's not about her so much as it's much about him. I'm torn between that. I feel like she should get to see him, but also it would probably flip his world upside down.
I think I'd rather have my world flipped.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
Because he probably thinks that his mom just hated him or gave him away or wanted nothing to do with him. And
I don't know.
Wasn't even close to it.
She's since now gotten married, and she seems to be doing well.
Well, that's good.
Like I said, she still holds that hope that they'll be reunited. So the sources that I used for this book, basically the entire, I mean, the sources that I used for this case, not this book, basically the entire, both episodes, I used two different books. One is called Finding Me by Michelle Knight, and the other one is called Hope by Amanda Berry and Gina DeJesus. And those were the three women that Ariel Castro held captive in his house for 11 years. And also, as well, Jocelyn as well was held captive for,
right.
She was six when they broke free, basically escaped. And he's dead. So
good.
It's not a happy ending because they had a lot of trauma to heal from. I'm sure they're probably still healing from it because this was just 9 years ago that they haven't even been released as long as they were in held in captivity. Think about that.
That's so crazy to think
today,
about.
Like 2022, they have not even been released for as long as they were held in captivity. So over a third of their life, they literally spent being tortured by this guy.
That's disgusting.
And Gina was 14, so honestly it was almost half of her life she spent, right, being tortured by this guy. But anyways, they're out now, they're thriving. He's dead. Yeah, that's the story. That was a request by Shane. So like I said, we've got quite a few different recommendations on the schedule. I bought myself a planner. So we're putting stuff on the schedule. So keep sending in case suggestions because we are getting to them slowly but surely. And then I guess now is a good time to flip it over to Curtis's Conspiracy Corner.
What? Okay. So. Sorry. Wow. I'll see. So you're really ready for the Conspiracy Corner.
Yeah, I mean, everybody can just go ahead and shut off their podcast now. You're fine. The best.
If you fast forwarded to this point, you found it. So I know I would have with that creepy stuff going on.
Yeah, that one was pretty bad.
Okay, so you know how like when people tell you something's free, what do we always say?
Nothing's ever free.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a free app that I know we use quite a bit.
What is it?
Snapchat.
I do use Snapchat a lot.
Did you know that Snapchat, you know how you use like the little faces, you like hold down on your face and it takes the
a filter
image of your face? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have the filter. Did you know that they actually take that and they then send the algorithm that is made by your face and sends it to facial recognition to the government?
Sure. Well, you know, I wonder, you could go a step farther with that. The Face ID that Apple and Samsung use.
Yeah, I guess you could. And if you want to go that far, and for any of our listeners, because Ashley hates it when I get it to the real point.
I know, because I'm like, well, great, now we're dead. Well,
right.
So much for this podcast.
So if anybody would like to look up US-9396354-B1.
A.K.A. your own death certificate.
Maybe your own death certificate. I've looked it up, so if I go missing and the feds show up, you know why. It's because that is the patent for apparatus and method for automated privacy protection and distributed images.
Oh, great.
They actually do scan your face for facial recognition.
Would you remember,
and it's used in government software from Snapchat.
Do you remember when Snapchat like first was made and people would be sending pictures to each other because it had a 8-second timer and it would be gone forever, quote unquote? Nothing's ever gone on the internet. Tell your kids that. Nothing is ever, you can never unsend something.
Well, yeah, because on Snapchat in the beginning, you couldn't even tell if people were screenshotting.
Yeah.
So people are just screenshotting, I mean, naked pictures and stuff, but. Quite a pause.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking back to the different apps that you can get to block it so that people don't know you're screenshotting. Or screen recording.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, then. Anyways, Curtis used to Anyways, it doesn't matter.
What?
He's used to be a little sneaky. Now he just uses my phone to take pictures of stuff. So, just so you know, he's got two phones.
I do have two phones.
He does.
One for the call and one for Pokemon
Go. That's true. He does play Pokemon Go. So what else is around your conspiracy? Or is that the whole thing?
That was the whole thing.
Doesn't seem like a conspiracy if you found proof about it.
Right.
So,
well, not all conspiracy theories are always just theories. Sometimes they actually come to light and they are true.
Well, that wouldn't be a conspiracy theory anymore. It would just be some shady stuff the government is doing.
Well, nobody's actually proved that it was real.
You did. You just found the patent.
Right. So they're coming after us. I found the patent for it.
Okay. Now I realize what you're saying. You're an idiot.
Tell me this wasn't the best conspiracy corner.
Okay, so anyways, this is your last podcast episode. Oh, look, my computer's glitching. Looks like the whole episode got deleted.
Oh my gosh. I deleted the virus.
Seriously. Okay, well, I guess that was Curtis's whole thing. I thought, honestly, this episode was going to be a lot longer, but sometimes I feel like I have to speed through things because Curtis gets so tired at the end of the night.
Sorry, I'm an old man.
That's true. Plus, it's really late. It's 11:30. He has to work tomorrow, but I don't, so.
True.
Just saying. So, anyways, if you want to suggest a case and hear it on the podcast, I will be adding it to the schedule, and you can send us an email to do so at partnersincrimethepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram to see all of our case-related photos, or I should say episode-related photos, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm tired. And that is at partnersincrimethepodcast on Instagram.
For the conspiracy theory, will you be making yourself with, like, a dog picture?
No. So I honestly thought that your conspiracy theory was going to be how, like, the filters would just pick up on faces that weren't really there. I'm really bummed. So thanks for that. Anyways, do you have anything else to add?
I do not.
All right. Well, then I guess I hope you keep listening and
have a good day, everybody.
Yep. See you later. Goodbye.